Galmetal has a Japanese schoolboy abducted by aliens, then gets stuck in another girl's body thanks to the aliens' experiments. He now has to learn how to drum and cooperate with the other members of this girl's band.
Well, howdy, howdy, everybody. Welcome to episode 424 of the Nintendo Oki podcast for Monday, July 30th, 2018. I'm your host, Tony, and joining me this week, I've got Shannon.
Hello.
What's going on, sir?
Oh, not much. I managed to con my entire family into a 2.5 hour one-way trip to Little Rock for Taco Bueno today.
Speaking of that, happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday. So, yes, 2.5 hours for Taco Bueno.
All right, so there may have been a trip to the water park that's in Little Rock as well, but it was really for Taco Bueno. Let's be real here.
At least for you, that's all you cared about.
Correct.
I have to tell you, in my opinion, it wouldn't have been worth it, but my wife would disagree with me.
Taco Bueno is the premier taco experience when you're going for fast food.
I don't know about that.
Oh, come on. You're a bell lover, aren't you?
I am, yes. I also really like Qdoba.
I don't think I've ever been to a Qdoba.
They're not quite as fast food, but they're pretty close. So I consider them a fast food restaurant.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's been a while, but that I've actually gone in the restaurant. But you have to like walk through a line and order all your stuff, and it's not like you just say I want a number 4 and they give you all your food and it's all reheated and stuff like at Taco Bell.
Like when I think of like a Mexican restaurant where I would go through a line and order all of my food, I think of Chipotle. Like is it like that kind of a level of fast food?
Yeah, that's a similar level, I think.
Okay. Maybe I'll have to give it a shot. I think there's one in Memphis. So.
I think it's much better than Chipotle, though.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know if we can agree. I think our taste buds for Mexican foods are just at odds with each other.
I mean, it may be. It may be.
I can't give a definitive answer because I've never tried Qdoba, but Chipotle's pretty darn good.
No, but when it comes to fast food, Taco Bell is the place for me.
All right.
So, I like my 20% beef, 80% sawdust Mexican food.
I will say their breakfast menu has changed things. Like I visit Taco Bell at least once a week. I feel like. Just because there is no Bueno here. If there was Bueno here, I'd probably be there and never touch Taco Bell again. But, I don't know. Taco Bell breakfast is okay. It just, you gotta be willing to compromise. You just know what you're getting yourself into.
I've never actually had Taco Bell breakfast.
You're probably a better man for it.
When it comes to fast food breakfast, I'm gonna go to McDonald's almost all the time.
You know, they've been doing it for well over 50 years. They got it right.
Those breakfast burritos, you can't beat them.
They're pretty good.
They are pretty good. So, we're all right. It is just you and me this week, Shannon.
Man, I'm sorry, guys, listeners out there. No, it's going to be a good show. We got some big news.
That we do. Some stuff that I know my kids are super excited about, so... let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about some of the games that you and I have been playing.
Yeah.
All right, Shannon, so what have you been playing this week?
Well, So on Monday of this week, that Taiko no Tatsujin Switch, Nintendo Switch version finally showed up.
Okay.
So I've been playing a system I haven't really played a whole lot in the last year, which is my Nintendo Switch.
Well, you should be playing it more because there's a lot of games on there.
There are a lot of games on there, but I'm just not terribly fond of the form factor. I tried to take it with me a lot with my job, and it's a little too bold. Like, I can't throw it in my pocket. I like the idea of the portability of the console, and this is just a little too big to not fit what I would want. But
yeah, no, I totally get that form factor thing. But if it was much smaller, I think you wouldn't be able to get the types of experiences on the system that you're getting.
Yeah, that's very true.
I think they're probably using every inch of space they possibly can inside that thing.
Yep. As for Taiko, I am playing it a lot. I am very much enjoying it. I mentioned last week about the motion controls with the Joy-Cons, mm-hmm. and that is proving to work very well. Doing it in tabletop mode and just kind of using the little kickstand and setting it up and playing my imaginary drums while I'm sitting at McDonald's eating breakfast.
There you go.
That's a good time. Let's see. One of the things that wasn't in the demo mode is there's all of these little party games.
Mm-hmm.
They're not as fast as like a Mario Party or a WarioWare game, but they're kind of on the same level of quirky, because you and up to four friends, or you versus three computer players. It's little mini games like who can bounce the volleyball back and forth faster, or who can catch goldfish out of this pond faster, and you're doing everything to rhythm. Mm-hmm. So it reminds me a lot of like Rhythm Heaven mixed with Mario Party. Okay. So
yeah, that's really cool.
And that's definitely gonna be in the rotation next time I have a game night over. So that's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say my kids have been playing the demo, and they keep asking if we're ever going to get the full version. Maybe. I have a problem importing it from Japan. I know you can get it digitally. I would want to have the drum, though, I think, playing the game.
Yeah, it's... I will say, if you've played the demo, you know that the Joy-Con thing works really well.
Yeah, it does.
For what it's doing. But yeah, very, very few things come close to that experience with the Tatakon, with the drum. It feels like you're playing the arcade game. One thing I'm a little surprised about with this game is it doesn't have some things that are staples in other Taiko games that I've played.
Like, really?
You don't get outfits for Dawn and Kat. You just pick different characters. So, like, when you go into play arcade mode, you're not dressing up your character, you're just picking one of the multiple characters. And they do have, you can play as Kirby, you can play as an Inkling, you can play as all of the different colored drums, or you can, I think there's a DLC active right now for something that looks like a Gundam, and it may not be a Gundam, and I'm horribly sorry, but it's a big robot. But... It just feels like they took a whole lot out of it, because that's one of the things I really enjoyed, especially with the PS4 game, is just collecting all of those outfit pieces, because, you know, it gave you a reason to go back and play the same songs over and over and over and over, because you were trying to finish the bingo cards, because you wanted to get the coins to spend on the outfit pieces. So it's, I don't know. But... as I continue to unlock characters, maybe I'll find more enjoyment to that.
Okay.
Let's see. I've also been playing Nidhogg 2 still. I went through all of the arcade mode. I tried getting Travis into playing Nidhogg, which kind of went okay.
Did it really?
Yeah, I mean, he's okay with a little bit of violence, and it's really bright and cartoony violence. And
the game seems a little complex for someone his age still.
he gets the running and jumping, but he doesn't get the parrying, and there's a whole lot of different weapons in this. Like the original game just had, you had the fencing swords. In this game, you get like a dagger and a broadsword and a bow and arrow or the fencing sword. So, and it's always random. So every time you die, you come back with a different weapon. So it's, he does fairly well with the broadsword just because it's one big swing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm probably going really easy on it because he's four.
Probably.
But, okay, I'm letting him win. But he's having fun, and that's all that matters. Right?
There you go.
So that's really good. I tried some of the online matchmaking as well, and it seems to work really well. I will have a review up this week for that. So
okay.
I've also, while I've had my Switch out, I decided today on the way to and from Little Rock, I would figure out what all the hype is about this Octopath RPG.
Okay.
So I downloaded the demo. I played through the demo as the girl.
Okay.
I can't remember her name.
Primrose.
Primrose, there you go. That's a very dark beginning for...
Her story is very dark.
And, like, nothing is ever written mature. Like, there's no mature language, no specific context, but there is a whole lot of innuendo for a lot of very dark stuff going on in her world.
Yeah.
And I really want to get this game so I can... I just want to see her come out on top in this predicament she's in.
Like, yeah. The other characters are not nearly like that, but her story is much darker than the others.
Yeah. I think I might be sold on this. I'm going to keep my eyes out for a deal, but yeah.
It is very high on my list of games that I want to play.
It just looks so good too. I remember all the hype and the swell around this about a year ago when the demo first came out. Mm-hmm. My issues with the Switch, I never really bothered to check it out, and I'm kind of hitting myself for it because I think I would have fell in love with it immediately, and I would have gotten it on launch day. But it looks so good. It's so reminiscent of all of those old Super Nintendo RPGs, and the difference of having the sprites in this diorama angle.
Yeah, that, and where everything is in that like 3D. So you've got mm-hmm. these 2D pixels in this 3D world, and it is beautiful.
Yep, and there's some really cool lighting effects going on, and just I never thought in my life I would see sand that looked so beautiful in a game. It's so silly, but I hit a point where I'm just with the screen sitting idle and looking at the lighting coming across, making the sand glitter.
Yeah, it's really good whenever you're at one of those points in the demos and it's sort of twilight, the sun is setting.
Yep.
And everything has that sort of yellowish orange glow to it.
Mm-hmm.
With those deep dark shadows behind everything, it's really, really nice.
This game has a style, and I really like it, and it'll probably be on my buying list at some point in the near future.
Yeah, it was that visual style that sold me on the game, regardless of the story. I want to just look at that game forever.
Yep. Let's see. Outside of systems, I've been playing two games on my phone.
Okay.
We've discussed Doom Soom. I don't know really how else to go into this. It is consuming free time again. I at least once or twice a day pull it out, and I feel like I'm losing an hour to Tsum Tsum each day, which nobody else is playing. Mm-mm. I keep inviting people, I keep sending hearts to people, and nobody's coming back. I think I need to give up. I think I'm chasing a fool's errand because I can't even get Lauren to play Tsum Tsum.
It's time to let the Tsum Tsum go.
I think I need to.
We were at, speaking of that, we were at the dollar store earlier today, and they have little Tsum Tsum toys, little plushies for sale, and my daughter was just going nuts because they were so cute.
They're adorable. They really are. And I don't even understand, because it's such a weird thing for the form factor of the characters.
It's it works somehow.
Yeah, man. It's kind of like, I I'm not a fan of the pop figure style, like that gigantic head with the lifeless eyes.
Yeah.
But just almost everything, every franchise, every license, every property, you can just fit it into that form factor. Disney just found their pop form factor.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. It works. The other game I am losing time to is Pokemon Go.
See, that's the one I don't get.
Yeah. I gotta jump into some buying.
What are you buying? So,
Pokemon Go got an update. They added some... From everything I've gathered so far, they've added friend modes, they added all of the Gen 2 Pokemon, they've now got some weird seasonal Pokemon where I'm seeing Alolan Rattatas, I'm seeing like Pikachus with hats and sunglasses and stuff on when I'm out and about, and you can also trade Pokemon now, or like transfer Pokemon between friends, and you can then send gifts and stuff. I was away from Pokemon Go for about a year, maybe a little more. I think I gave out just around the same time the rest of the world did.
Yeah.
But I picked up a Pokemon Go Plus, and I'm playing Pokemon Go because of it.
See, and that's, I have never understood the Pokemon Go craze. I don't think the game is fun in any way.
See, I'm looking at it as another reason to get out of the house, and I don't, I mean that, like, get out and go walking.
Yeah.
Because this is a game that, I mean, you can't play it while you're driving or while you're really working or doing much, but it's the kind of thing that my neighborhood, like, I live about a mile away from our town square, and there's at least 20 Pokestops and 3 gyms right around the town square, so... It's super easy for me to get Travis out like I did this morning and us just to go for a walk down the road and back, and, you know, a 30 minute walk just to get outside and maybe catch some Pokemon. And the Pokemon Go Plus thing allows me to practically play it passively, because it just, I leave the phone in my pocket now, and the screen's locked, so it's not burning my battery as bad as it used to. And then now I've got this, you know, this little tag thing on my wrist that vibrates when I'm near a Pokestop. Push the button, it spins the Pokestop, and if there's a Pokemon up, it'll flash green if it's a Pokemon I've already caught, so I'm willing to just push the button and roll a dice. If it flashes yellow, it's a Pokemon I've never caught before, so I'll pull my phone out and try and actually put effort into catching it.
Yeah.
Because whenever you push that button, it's just a dice roll. You never have a guarantee of whether you're actually going to catch the Pokemon or not.
And maybe that's the way I need to play the game.
I think it works really well. Like it when I think of how I did Pokemon Go a little over a year ago, I feel like I was walking with my nose and, you know, with my face down, my nose in my phone, and not really paying attention.
Yeah, and I think that's been my biggest problem with it, is that even though you're out and about, you still have to have your face glued to that phone all the time.
I think this worked out really well, and like it, I feel like I more went for a walk with my son than I played Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
So
and you know, I know with Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu coming out later this year, my kids are going to want those games. And with the Pokemon Go integration stuff, they're probably going to want to do that kind of thing as well. And maybe the Pokemon Go Plus thing is the way to be able to do that and not feel like you're tied to that screen all the time.
So that's what motivated a lot of this. Because I pre-ordered a couple of weeks ago. I pre-ordered Let's Go Pikachu, and the thing that sold me on that was the fact that it's like couch co-op. You can do multiplayer and the idea, you know, seeing how much Travis loves Pokemon. We watch the TV show on a regular basis every week. He loves the plushes. Every now and again, we'll sit down and we'll look at the cards. He doesn't really grasp the card game yet. I really like the idea of getting out and doing this with him. And then when that game comes out, being able to say, okay, we're going to start transferring our Pokemon in. All those Pokemon that we got from our walk, now we can start bringing them in on the big TV.
And using them in an actual game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that I think is a really good idea, and I know my kids are going to want to do that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I have yet to, outside of Pokemon Go Plus, buying the little Bluetooth tag thingy, I haven't invested any money into the game. Like, I haven't bought any Pokemon coins or anything, and I still feel like I'm getting something out of it, which is good.
How much is that little tag?
It was like 30, I think it's like $30.
Okay.
Yeah. I found it at Target, so it was like $30. And I think GameStop and Best Buy have them still. Amazon, it's just third-party sellers and people are marking it up. I think the fact that the Let's Go announcements didn't just get me back into it. It got a lot of people back into it, so they started selling out.
Yeah, and I really like the idea of that little thing. And so instead of having, you know, looking at your screen all the time and saying, okay, there's one over there, we walk over there and try to find it. Just on our regular day-to-day, you know, walks and stuff, because we go walking in the park all the time because we live right across the street from it. Being able to say, okay, well, we're walking and now there's a Pokemon close to us. Let's go try to catch it and do that kind of thing. That's a little more enticing to me than having to constantly look at your phone all the time while you're playing the game.
Now, I'm going to be honest. I guide our walk up and around the square and back down towards the library just so we do hit all the Pokestops.
Yeah.
But I get what you mean. Like, seeing that a Pokemon is, you know, 50 yards away in a field, and walking out into that field just to catch it. No, yeah. This has worked a lot better. We stayed on the sidewalk the whole time, so.
Yeah. And I know where all the Pokestops and things are in the park across the street, so I could do the same type of thing.
Yeah.
With my kids. And I live right across the street from a gym. There's an old abandoned fire station across the street from my house. And
you got to keep that thing on lock.
It is actually a gym, so.
The high school that I live across the street from, it used to be a gym and a Pokestop, and I don't know how they pulled away from it, but when I logged back in a couple of weeks ago on Pokemon Go, the high school is no longer a gym or a Pokestop. I guess they had to get the kids to stop playing it.
Yeah, and you know, places were able to say, hey, we don't want to be a gym or whatever anymore. Can you please remove us from your database or whatever.
Yeah. I used to be able to sit in my kitchen and spin the Pokestop, so it was a matter of keeping it on lock and away from all the high school kids. But not anymore. Let's see. I also, while I was at Target, picked up Detective Pikachu because that was going to happen eventually, and it was on a good price.
Did you get the giant amiibo?
No, not yet. I've got to see that thing on sale. $30 for an amiibo is too much, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It is cool looking, and it is big and dopey, and then Pikachu's got a cool detective get up on. But I can't justify it. It's too much money. Especially when I can use, I've got the Power Saves amiibo pog thing
that
I can just upload any amiibo data onto. So if I actually needed it for anything in the game,
you could just download the...
Yeah, download the RFID number. So, and then I also pre-ordered Pixel Ripped 1989 for PlayStation VR.
Okay.
So that looks like it's going to be a lovely experience in a couple days. But that is it for me, Tony.
Well, let's see what I've been playing. I actually haven't played anything new this week. Mostly just Fortnite and Paladins. Well, I guess Paladins is somewhat new. played Fortnite a couple nights this week. What's that?
What's Paladins?
So Paladins is not Overwatch.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's Overwatch, but...
It's Overwatch, but it's not Overwatch.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, that's the easiest description of what it is. It is a, you know, a hero-based shooter where you have different types of heroes like support and frontline and guys that are really good at flanking and things like that. And you're fighting against another team of heroes. And then
so who's that really fast one? Is that Tracer? No, that's not Tracer. That's Chaser. That kind of thing?
It's not quite that on the nose, but it's pretty close. I mean, you have a lot of characters that you can see are inspired by the type of... But I think Paladins actually came out before Overwatch. If I remember correctly. But it is... it's that same sort of thing. It went free to play this week on Switch. It's been out for a couple months on the system already, but you had to buy the Founders Pack, which I think was $30. And that gave you access to every character and some other additional stuff as well. But
you
now,
we're not kidding. I am looking at paladins.com, and some of these character arts are very. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not Overwatch.
So if you're playing the free-to-play version, you get a smaller selection of characters, and it rotates every so often the characters that you can choose from. So if there are particular characters that you like to play all the time, you have to actually buy them. And there are a couple of different ways you can do that. You can spend real money, just buy the character outright. You could buy the full character pack, which gives you access to all the characters. Or you can actually earn credits in game to be able to buy the characters.
Well, that's cool.
And it's like most of the characters are like 30,000 gold coins, which you get for playing the game. I think after 2 or 3 hours, I had 17,000 gold coins. So I mean, it's not like you have to play dozens and dozens of hours to be able to get enough money in game to earn enough for one character.
Well, that's good.
They actually do make it so that you can earn the characters fairly quickly. I mean, if you wanted to get all of them, it would take you a very long time if you don't spend any actual money. And then, of course, like any of the other free-to-play games, there are different cosmetic things that you can buy using real money. To make your characters look different, different emotes, different things that they do in the game.
You want to dance with everybody else? That'll cost you 24,000 coins.
That's exactly right. And I don't know what the way to purchase that kind of stuff is. If you have to spend real money to get those cosmetic things, or if there are ways to get those in the game as well. I haven't dug that deep into it yet. I'm not sure. Like with Fortnite, where I was like, okay, I've had a lot of fun with this, I'm going to give them some money, and I bought the battle pass for Fortnite for season 4 a few weeks ago. I haven't got to that point with Paladins yet. But I know Paladins does have that same sort of thing where you can buy a battle pass and it gives you lots of different cosmetic and collectible things that you can earn in the game.
That's cool.
By getting better. There are 2 or 3 different game modes that I know of. There's regular team deathmatch. The first team to 40 deaths or 40 kills wins. There's another one where you are escorting a train from one side of the map to the other. And that's actually really cool. What it does is... It plays that you play that mode basically twice. One time your team is the defender, and then the other time your team is the attacker. So it's not like everybody has to race to the middle and try to force it from one side to the other. You're actually, if you're on the defending side, you're just trying to keep the characters away from that train so that it can't move forward. And then you're not having to worry about going back. Once the time runs out, if they haven't made it to the objective, then your team wins. And then on the flip side of that, if you're the attacking team, you're trying to stay around it as much as you can and fight off the defenders so that you can continue to move that train forward to reach the objective at the other side of the map. So it's really neat that way. So it's not that constant back and forth type thing where it seems like nobody is gaining any ground when you're playing.
Is this the kind of game where in the same style of Overwatch, like every specific character has its own benefits and you have to basically play your part?
Yes.
Okay.
And so when you're doing the character select at the beginning, it'll tell you nobody has picked a support class. And so it gives you the opportunity to switch your character from something to a support class if you want to try to make sure your team is as balanced as possible.
Good.
I found out I really suck with the support characters. The couple of times I've played as a support character, I've had my worst rounds in terms of my kill-death ratio, where I've gotten like 2 kills and I've died 11 or 12 times. I'm really bad with those characters.
Okay. So, we all have what we're good at.
Yeah, and support is not what I'm good at. So, I have to pick one of the characters where I'm constantly sort of on the attack. I'm not good with those other types of characters. When I've had the opportunity to pick those characters I'm really good with, those numbers sort of flip. Overall, I think I've played the game for like 4 hours total this week. My kill-death ratio is pretty even at, you know, a ratio of 1-to-1, basically. If you throw in the third category, you have kills, deaths, and then assists, where you've done some damage to an opponent, but you weren't the one that actually took them out, and it keeps track of that as well. So if you throw those assist numbers in there, I'm much higher. So I'm seeing more people die than I'm dying myself, which is good. I don't see that thing where I'm frustrated, where I feel like I'm always dying all the time. I feel like everything that I've done so far has helped my teams win, and my win-loss ratio is pretty even as well. I think the loss side is a little heavier, but it's not too bad. It's not to the point where I'm losing 2 out of 3 matches every time I'm playing.
That's good.
So, I'm going to put a little bit more time into this. I don't know yet if this is going to grab me like Fortnite has, where I still go back every chance I have, and I'll put a little bit of time into Fortnite and playing through that. But I will put some more time into that. I've posted a couple of videos to the Facebook group of some of my better moments in Paladins this week. So you can see those on the Facebook group if you're interested in seeing what the game is like at all. And then the other thing, the last thing I've played, and I've literally played 5 minutes of this, is Train Simulator World for the PS4.
Okay.
It is just, you are the conductor of a train. And it seems like it's pretty in-depth into this stuff. It's not like you just sit down and push go and then push stop when you get to where you need to be.
Well, don't you know there's way more involved than go and stop in trains?
Well, I mean, there is. So I've literally played the tutorial for one section of the game, and that's really all that I've played. It looks really nice. I mean, it is the best looking train game I've ever played so far.
That's cool.
But I don't really have enough time into the game to say anything about it. I'll talk more about that next week. But you know, I love my simulators, so.
I'm definitely curious, like, is this... Who developed Train Simulator? Is this like Japanese Train Simulator, European Train Simulator?
The trains that I'm driving are all from Europe and North America. Let me see if I can find the developer of the game real quick.
I just gotta ask, because like we've all played, like I know definitely Micah, Shelby, and myself, we've all played some crazy Japanese Train Simulator and bus driving simulator games, and they can all get pretty hardcore. I mean, you're bound to some very specific rules.
Train Simulator World was developed by Dovetail Games. They're a British company.
Okay. European Train Simulator.
Yeah, the tutorial I did was for an Amtrak train in New York somewhere. But I know there's Germany and England are where the other two sets of train things that you can control are. So.
Okay.
I'll play that this week and I'll come back next week and talk about that a little more. This definitely seems like the kind of game though that Micah would probably be interested in for sure. But I will let you know next week. That is all that I have been playing though.
What are you buying?
Let's see. I picked up, because, you know, for the last 4 or 5 months, I have not had a controller for my PS4.
Yeah.
I've been using the Miku controller to do everything, so it's basically just been a watch Netflix and YouTube box. Because you can't really play games with that Miku controller, even though it has all the buttons that you would need to play games.
Well, if you said you played Train Simulator, that must mean you picked up a controller.
I did. I went to GameStop earlier today, and that's why I've literally only played about 5 minutes of that game, because I just got the controller today. I picked up one of those mini Hori controllers for the PS4.
Nice.
It's a wired controller. It's really nice, though.
So what are your thoughts on it so far? Like, do you is it comfortable for you to hold and play with, for, you know, being a grown man with normal adult sized hands?
I mean, so far it seems like it has been. I haven't played anything, you know, that's really intense. I haven't tried to play like Fortnite or anything with the controller to see games that are going to require a lot of really quick, fast inputs and stuff like that, or intense type gameplay. Train Simulator, I don't know if you know, is not really that intense a game. So it's not, it doesn't really put a lot of stress on the controller.
Are you kidding me? You got to make it to that station on time, man. It's intense. It's hardcore.
Well,
don't be late. People got to go to work.
In the tutorial, everything's set up so that you succeed.
Oh.
So, I mean, but yeah, as far as it feels really comfortable in my hands, you know, it's almost half the size of a regular PS4 controller because it's designed for kids, basically.
Yep.
But it was cheap. That's why I got it.
And it is the cheapest PS4 controller you can buy in a retail environment.
It is $30.
Yep. And it's pretty good. Travis likes it. It works really well for a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
Works really well for you too.
I mean, yeah, I want to try playing something like Fortnite to see how it'll work in a game like that. Or, you know, Yakuza or something. I could turn on Yakuza and play that and see how that does. It doesn't have a touchpad. I mean, it technically does. There is a way to turn a touchpad on, but it's not an actual touchpad.
No, and it's got like a little, it's got a rectangular button to replicate pressing the button beneath the touchpad.
Yeah.
And then I think if you hold that touchpad button, you can use the right analog stick to mimic.
There's
swipe.
Another button at the bottom of the controller that is labeled TP.
Yep.
That turns it, that will, if you hold it for 2 seconds, it will put it into touchpad mode, and then you can use the analog sticks like you're using the actual touchpad.
Yep.
So that is the only way to get the touchpad functionality to work. But I, you know, as far as comfort and everything goes, it seems like it's going to be fine for what I'm needing, and then, you know, at some point I can pick up an actual PS4 controller. But I just wanted something in the house that we could play games on the PS4, because I know there's another Yakuza game coming up pretty soon that I'm going to want to play.
Yeah, buddy.
So I had to have something in the house, and it was only $30, so it's got a 10-foot cord. So I can sit comfortably on my couch and play. Like any other wired controller, though, you can't turn the PlayStation on with the PlayStation button.
Huh.
So you have to, you know, turn the PlayStation on before you sit down.
Not even if it's in rest mode?
Nope.
Weird.
My PlayStation is in rest mode all the time, and it will not recognize it until the system is actually turned on.
Huh.
So...
Well, at least you can turn it off and sign in and do everything else that required a PlayStation. But
yes.
Because if I remember right, that's what was broken with your other controller.
Yeah, that's the only button that's broken with that controller. But if you can't turn the system on or turn it off, because that PlayStation button doesn't work at all. And what it was doing, actually, was it was like it was registering that the PlayStation button was always being pressed.
Oh.
So...
not good.
If I turn the system off, 30 seconds later, the system turns itself back on because it thinks the PlayStation button on the controller was being pressed. So it may just be a matter of getting in and cleaning it out, but I tried that on another controller that had the same issue, and it didn't work. So this is not the first PlayStation controller that's had things spilled on it in this house, unfortunately. It's happened a few times.
Children.
That happens.
Yep.
So, but that is it for me. So let's take a quick break. We will come back and we'll talk about the news. Shannon, have you messed around with Labo at all?
Not a bit.
Okay.
So I have not played a single Labo game. I have not bothered with a single cardboard attachment.
So I guess the news that Nintendo's announced a new Labo set doesn't bother you in any way.
It means nothing to me.
So, yes, Nintendo this week just stealth announced the third Nintendo Labo kit. It's called the Vehicle Kit. It comes with the parts to make a steering wheel and a gas pedal for like cars. There's also a joystick type controller for airplanes, and then this other monstrosity that you hold, and it's got these like two giant paddles that you can turn, and it's used to control submarines.
That's pretty cool.
So, I mean, it looks really cool. The second Andrew saw it, he said, I have to have that.
And they've already added in all of the functionality to use Labo with Mario Kart, right?
Yes. So, there's probably going to be another update to Mario Kart after this comes out so that you can use the Labo car set to play Mario Kart. But yeah, it comes out on September 14th, which coincidentally is 2 days after Andrew's birthday. So we know what he's getting for his birthday this year. Oh, he already knows. and it's $60. $70, sorry. It is.
Yeah, that's some pricey cardboard.
$70. It comes with a cartridge that has the vehicle stuff on it. So that answers the question I've had about whether Nintendo would just update other versions of Labo with new things, or if you'd get a brand new game out of it, basically.
If they can sell you another box of cardboard with a cartridge.
They're going to do it.
They're going to do it.
I mean, the game stuff looks really fun. I mean, it's simple stuff, just like the previous things. Like the car they were showing you driving around, and then there were these things. There's this cord, basically, that's on the steering wheel that looks kind of like, you know, the rip cord for like a parachute or something. You pull on it, and it gives you like boost in your car. So you can go all fast and furious when you're playing Labo.
Can you tell me that cardboard's got NOS?
Yes, this cardboard has NOS. The car also, there's this thing where they were driving around and there were trees out in the area, and you could actually make this giant saw blade come out of the side of your car and chop down trees.
So you can make more cardboard.
The airplane stuff, they also showed this thing, like, and I don't know how you would ever actually be able to do this in-game. In the trailer, there was this thing where the kid who was driving, he hit this ramp with the car, and then it showed him getting the airplane controller, and the car morphed into an airplane. I don't know how you'd ever have time to actually do that in-game.
Pause button.
Because getting the Joy-Cons out of those pieces of cardboard is not exactly easy. So it would have to be a really long fall for you to have time to get the Joy-Con out of the car set, put it into the airplane set, and keep going from there.
I just have one very important question. Hmm. Did it make the Transformers sound effect?
I don't think it did.
Dang it.
No.
Missed opportunity.
So
did it all right, follow-up question.
Okay.
Did it make the Switch snap set?
No.
Dang it.
It didn't make any sounds when it transformed from a car to a plane.
They're messing up.
So the airplane controller has a little like missile launcher switch so that you can, you know, shoot missiles out of your airplane. And then the submarine had this like grapple hook thing that it was showing off where you could, you know, drive up to these cages basically underwater, rip the cage off of it with the grappling hook, and then there was a treasure chest inside the cage.
What was inside the cage?
A treasure chest, but I don't know what was in the treasure chest.
More cardboard.
Probably. And then as soon as you open that treasure chest underwater, the cardboard gets all soggy and you can't use it. So.
Tell me about another racing experience.
I could do that. How would you like to race as SpongeBob SquarePants against a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
Whoa, that sounds like awesome.
You can totally do that. Because Nickelodeon Kart Racers is coming to the Switch this holiday.
Nice. Okay. I remember playing Nicktoon Racers on my Game Boy Advance mm-hmm. and really enjoying it as a kid. Same thing?
This looks very similar to that.
Okay.
I don't know. I didn't play a ton of that kart racer on the GBA, so I couldn't say yes, this is that exact same experience. It seems a lot like that, though. There are 24 different tracks that you'll be able to race on, and some of the characters that or franchises that we know characters are coming from are SpongeBob, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Rugrats, and Hey Arnold.
Nice, all staples.
So, four-player, local, multiplayer. It doesn't say anything about online play for this, so I'm guessing there's probably no online play in this game.
That's okay. I don't know how serious you can take Nicktoon Racing, but then again, you could say the same about Mario Kart and everybody takes it seriously, so maybe missed opportunity?
Maybe? I don't know. So that'll be, what, the third kart racer on the Switch now? You got Mario Kart, Hello Kitty, and then this one.
And isn't there a new Sonic Racers game coming?
There is. Sonic Racing is coming to the Switch as well.
Yeah.
So the kart racing landscape is starting to fill up on the Switch. And this will be also available on PS4 and Xbox One.
So, okay.
It is not a Switch exclusive.
That Nicktoons Racing was also on the PlayStation. They had a they actually had an arcade machine, like an arcade cabinet
for really it.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here imagining maybe if this new Nickelodeon kart racer does well, maybe we'll see an exclusive release at Dave and Buster's or something.
I don't know if we'll get that this time around.
One can dream.
That's true.
If I can drive around as Patrick and, you know, throw slime bombs at people, I'm in. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care what the graphics look like. It just sounds like awesome. Just give it a shot. I'm willing to try.
All right. Well, this holiday, you'll get that chance.
Right.
Right on.
So, but before that, there's probably another game you're going to want to play. Well, maybe not, because you already have it. Because Bandai Namco announced that Taiko no Tatsujin will be coming to the West.
This is a miracle.
We haven't seen... There was a Wii release here? Or was that just in Japan?
The last release that we got stateside was... Yeah, it was Taiko Drum Master for the PlayStation 2. And it had, I don't think, any of the original songs from the PS2 releases. Like, it was all crummy music from the early 2000s, and they were all shortened pop culture songs from the US. It was an amazing experience that it came over. It was my first experience playing a Taiko game, because I played it after an OVGE over at Micah's house.
Mm-hmm.
And like instantly bought it on Amazon after playing it.
I remember that.
Like, it never took off, and here we are. I think Mike said something like 14 years after that game came out, we finally get another shot at this in the States.
Yeah, and they're not calling it Taiko Drum Master over here again.
No, they're giving it the proper Japanese name,
Taiko no Tatsujin. There are two different versions coming out. Both of these, it seems like, are going to be out on November 2nd. There is Taiko no Tatsujin Drum Session for the PS4. Which is that the one that's currently out in Japan?
Yep, I believe that's actually the exact name of it for the Japanese release. It's Taiko no Tatsujin Drum Session for the PS4.
Yeah. It will include characters like Miku and Hello Kitty.
Yep, there's one of the cool things about that game is it lets you play, or at least the Japanese version allowed you to play alongside guest characters like Miku, Doraemon, Hello Kitty. Is it Heihachi? The dude from Tekken with like the weird hair?
Yes.
Okay. Heihachi's in there. Like there's all types of weird guest characters that you can play alongside with, like you're playing two player.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a really fun online mode in that, which I've talked about in length in the past, about how this game basically logs every single one of your plays and uses them to do like ghost characters with your friends. Yeah. Online.
And really, all of that will be in the Western release of that game as well.
Tell me about this Switch game.
Let's see. The Switch one is called Taiko no Tatsujin Drum and Fun. It will have the motion control gaming, like you know, you've talked about, where you use the Joy-Cons as the drumsticks.
Very cool.
It will also have exclusive characters that are exclusive to the Switch version. Kirby, Splatoon 2 characters, and then it'll have the 20 rhythm-based mini games that you've been talking about as well.
Sweet.
For up to 4 players.
It sounds like this is just translated releases in the States.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have specific confirmation, and everything that's come out of Bandai from Twitter over the last couple of days, they're being very secretive about specifics. We don't know if these are coming physical for the US.
I don't see anything about physical release or, you know, like the drum controller.
Yeah, no word on the Tatacon. The only thing that's been confirmed is that it's digital only for Europe on PlayStation Network. No word on whether it's going to be digital only for the Switch or if it's digital only for North America. But the fact that this is coming is a miracle. And even though I already own these, I will be voting with my dollars because I want this to continue.
Yeah. Like, if you get the digital version right now, there is an English language option for that, isn't there?
And it's not just the digital version. Like, I bought the so for the PS4, I bought the Japanese physical disc, And when I put it in my system that was set up with a US, it goes based off of your system language. So because my system language was using North American English, it displays the game to me using North American English. Mm-hmm. The Switch release is in Japanese currently, and in August, I believe, we're supposed to be getting a patch or an update that adds English to the game.
Okay.
So that's been confirmed from Bandai Namco Japan that is coming for the Switch release.
Nice. Yeah, because I mean, it's pretty easy to get through most of the menus if you don't understand Japanese, but having an English language option would be really nice.
Yeah, and even if you run into trouble with anything playing any of those games in Japanese, it is so easy nowadays to just pull out your phone with Google Translate or Japan Glasses or, you know, like there's so many apps that just with a live feed through your phone translate the language. It's really cool.
So, but yeah, that is very exciting news because I love playing these games. But I've been hesitant to pick them up because it's been really hard to get them in the U.S.
That, and there's usually your, if you don't pre-order them through Amazon Japan or an import site, they usually go up really quickly in price. It was the same issue with the Vita version. Like the Vita version came out in Japan as like a $50 release, and for a very long time it was sitting at $70 or $80 to get it from Amazon or Play Asia. Mm-hmm. So those importing games is a risky business unless you know for a fact you want it before release.
Yeah. So, but you won't have to worry about that before long because we will be getting a Western release of Taiku no Tatsujin for the PS4 and the Switch.
Yay! Please, people, please, I implore you, invest in this. Pre-order it. Tell them you want it.
These games are incredibly fun. If you've never played them, they are a lot of fun to play.
Another thing that's worth pointing out is, I don't know if I ever mentioned this, the Switch version also uses touchscreen. So, like, when you're playing single player on the Switch console, you have the drum down at the bottom, and you can use your fingers and tap the drum.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest feature to all the 3DS games, was the bottom screen was always the drum, so you could either use the buttons, or you could use they called them bocce pens, because each one of the DS and 3DS games came with little sets of stylus mm-hmm. that looked like they looked like Don and Kat, so you could use two stylus to play the game. It's amazing that they brought that back and put it in the Switch version. It's very cool.
So. But yep, November for those releases, so be on the lookout for those games. And that is it for the news, so let's move on to listener feedback. And our first one this week comes from Sam via Facebook, who says, "What do you miss most about video games before the popularity of the internet?"
I miss the surprise. Yeah. I miss like going to Blockbuster, not knowing what the heck I was picking up and having to make that decision based off of what's on the back of the box and getting home and it was a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Every now and then you'd get something that was really crummy, but when you struck gold, like the first time I got Soul Calibur 2 for the Game Boy or for the GameCube and rented that through Blockbuster, and I remember getting home and going through the mission, the story mode on it, and just, oh, so cool. And then every now and then you pick up something like there was a Donald Duck game for the GameCube that I can't remember what the heck it was, but it looked cool on the box, and then it ended up not being very good.
Yeah. I think for me, it's all the physicality of video games. Physical magazines... being excited about seeing those things, you know, seeing previews of games a couple months in advance that you've never seen before, looking through the strategy guides and or the magazines that had the maps in them of the levels, and seeing like an entire Mario level on the pages of that magazine and being able to look and explore every bit of that level on that piece of paper, physical manuals. That's the thing I miss most is physical manuals.
Yeah. Nicholas is the, I think, or Nicholas, or however they pronounce it.
It's actually Mojang.
they are the only company that's actually still making good, full-featured, full-color manuals. For every one of their releases on Switch, it's been amazing to see that stuff.
It was so nice to get a game and see a big, thick manual that not only had all the instructions, but just so much information about the game, where you'd see a list of all of the enemies, and it would give you a little bit of information about them, and all of the weapons and stories about the game in the manual itself, and you could spend as much time just looking through that as you could playing the game.
I can remember times taking the when I had Pokemon Yellow, I wasn't allowed to bring my Game Boy to school, but I sure as heck took that little tiny player's guide to school.
Oh, I did the same thing with games.
I probably read that darn thing 100 times. Link to the Past on the Game Boy Advance. I wasn't allowed to bring my Game Boy Advance to school, but I sure as heck brought the big player's guide with me. And I'd be planning out what I was going to do when I would get home, and just, you get to read it, and they just don't do that stuff anymore.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely just the physical nature of video games with everything about them. Yeah. So.
As much as I can't stand limited run games, I am all about what they do. But we were having this conversation before the show. I don't invest in every little game that they put out, but when there's something that matters to me, it's nice to know that there's a company out there that's actually trying to make that stuff a reality.
Because we were talking about the box art for Mutant Muds, which if you haven't seen that, it's adorable. You should all go check out just the box art for Mutant Muds.
Mutant Muds collection on the Nintendo Switch. Yep. What's the name of the Super Limited?
Super Limited.
Yeah, Super Limited Games is putting that thing out. The box art looks amazing. I can't stand that. Like, I understand why they're doing what they're doing, because they don't want to lose their butt and invest a lot into a bunch of cartridges, and they're making it for the people who care, which I get. But man, it's gotten to the point where anybody can make a game and anybody can put it out digitally, which is amazing. But if you want your thing, your game, to become a physical thing, it either needs to strike 1,000 and get picked up by a huge publisher, or you just need to get in with the right people, because the limited run is making that stuff happen for those who can't. So.
What do you got? And then our last one comes from Cole via Facebook, who wants to know, which is more fun, single player or multiplayer games?
As multi-layered.
It is. And it depends on the type of game, I think.
Yeah.
Generally, I'm going to say I prefer single player experiences to multiplayer experiences. But there are exceptions to that.
I will 100% agree with you, because when I'm playing an RPG or a rhythm game, I want to be left alone because I want to focus all of my mind into what I'm doing. However, if I am playing Jackbox is not fun by yourself.
You can't
play that by yourself.
No, you cannot.
Or Mario Kart. Like, Mario Kart, you can play by yourself, but you're going to hate yourself. Yeah,
or
for
Smash
it.
Brothers.
Or Smash Brothers, it's another one. You know, with the exception of the GameCube and the Wii, that both had the big long story missions that we all probably played 1,000 times.
Man, I wish they would bring back Subspace Emissary.
Absolutely. It just depends on the type of the game. And even within that, we were talking about all the mini games, the multiplayer mini games that are in the Taiko Tetsujin Switch game, that the core mode of that game is a lot more fun for me to play by myself. But those party games give me a reason to play it with other people and to see a different layer of enjoyment. So
yeah. So, and then he also wants to know which is more fun, online or couch multiplayer. Couch multiplayer.
Yeah, I want to be sitting together with everybody when we're playing games. It's a much more pleasant experience.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I enjoy playing and have enjoyed playing things like Fortnite with people online, you know, in cities where I'm not at. But nothing beats being there with the trash talking and the you know, when you do somebody does something to you and you just reach over and smack them on the shoulder, that being in the same room will always top online multiplayer, I think.
I agree 100%.
There you go. That is going to be it for this week. So, if anybody has any questions, comments, feedback about anything you heard on the show this week, you can send that to podcast@nintendo-oki.com. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Nintendo_Oki. Head on over to YouTube, check out the stuff we got going on over there, or come on over to the Facebook group, talk to us there. Thank you very much, Shannon, for being on the show this week.
It was a pleasure.
And having said that, we'll see everybody again in 7 days.